through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
Welcome into Tom, Jake, and Stacy. It's Thursday. It's 2020. And guys, it finally happened. The owners are finally getting what they've always craved. An extra playoff team. Two extra playoff teams, actually. And it appears that we're going to get at least one extra game. Week 18, a 17th game. Flying in the face of every safety precaution that the NFL has taken over the past 5 years or so. Here we go, diluting the product, killing the golden goose. Your thoughts?
Here's the thing is, I don't necessarily hate this from a viewership standpoint, right? So I'm going to take a couple different hats here, if you will. From a viewership standpoint, I don't hate it from the sense that, like, look, three games, a wild card weekend, really all you're doing is giving that two seed a game instead of having their bye that they have rightfully deserved, right? They are now having to play on that Saturday or that Sunday. To me, that doesn't bother me so much. I would, as a fan, how would I not like having, you know, football, you know, three games to watch? So to me, from that standpoint, I don't hate it.
Can we just go point by point here?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Let's just talk about that, adding that third wild card game. On Sunday, we're used to watching three slates of games, right?
Yes.
The morning, the afternoon, and then the night game. No big deal. But when you add that seventh seed, it's a 9-7 team. It's an 8-8 team. Maybe even it's a 7-9. Why does that team need to be a part of the playoffs? Hasn't that cheapened the regular season race up to that point?
There are some times when that team is legitimately a good team. I think of when the Seahawks and 49ers kind of dominated the NFC West, and the Cardinals were always right on the outside. And there was a time, I think they were 10 wins?
10
or 11 yeah. wins. Didn't make the playoffs. And obviously under this format, they would have. Under this format, this past year, the Rams would have. And I think you would have said that they were at least a good enough team to, in another year, be a wild card team when you didn't also have two really good teams from the NFC West. So there are times when it would be fair, but I think it's very obvious that this is, yeah, the incentive for players is that you get, you know, more your team potentially in the playoffs, but the real incentive is are for owners.
Definitely.
That you get more money and ticket sales.
Correct.
And merchandise purchases, moments, viewership, everything from this. Like, this is very much, I think, a concession that the players made to gain in turn, you know, whether a bigger revenue share, whether it's, you know, insurance rule changes or whatever. This is something that is clearly an ownership kind of
gain. Much money, extra money, do they actually make by adding a game to the NFL schedule and adding, I guess, two games to the playoffs?
It's a good question because the difference is obviously you're looking at it for preseason. That's what you're swapping out week 17 game for the fourth preseason game.
Right.
So you're getting more ticket sales. You're getting more viewership on TV revenue that you can sell more. And then also you have two more playoff games that you are selling, which obviously brings in a lot of revenue. So I would be curious as to what that number is too, Tom, as to what is driving this so much for the owners. Do they make that much more money where it's like, we got to make this happen? Because they've been trying to get this done for a couple years now.
It's been about a decade, maybe even more.
So for the average fan, I look at it and go, okay, it's not that big of a deal. Okay, the second seed, it definitely stinks for them that they don't get that bye. But ultimately, okay, if I'm a player, I'm frustrated by this because, yeah, traditionally it has been the one and the two seed that earn a first round bye. That is legitimate. That is something that we all go for, that we all strive for as a player, that you are – you get and earn that rest. That rest is critical and has been a critical factor for teams having success in the playoffs, having that home field advantage. So you're taking that away from, you know, certain players, that right, that you know, reward for being the second best team in your conference. Now, the other point that makes it frustrating is that, as you mentioned, you're getting less quality teams that are actually making the playoffs. And in the NFC, it's not that bad because you actually have some really good football teams
The
NFC.
That stuff is cyclical.
Correct.
Jake, and that stuff will go back and forth. But here's the thing. I'm not concerned with who it's fair to that, like they did, like say a 10-6 team misses the playoffs. So what? That's what adds to the drama. I don't care what's fair to them.
Right.
I don't care what's fair to a 9-7 team. If they get, you know, jobbed one year because there's a lot of other good teams in the conference, so what? That's part of what makes the sport great, is that sometimes it seems unfair, and we look at that team and we say, man,
right,
that
you
stinks
were so
for them.
Close.
What if they had won this game in week two? They would have been 11-5 or whatever. They're 10-6 and they missed the playoffs. So what if it's not fair?
And
that's what makes it great.
And I agree. And I know that I know that you know this, but again, there's absolutely no way the owners could come out and say, and we love it because it adds more drama to the postseason. That's absolutely not what this is about.
No.
They want more money. They want stadium credits. They want as much a share of the revenue as they can get. They want to spend the least amount of money, going back to those stadium credits, they want to spend the least amount of money out of their own pockets for these teams as they possibly can, and they want to take in more revenue. You want the league to grow in revenue every single year. It's not about increasing the playoff field to make it fun for fans or for players. You actually increase the likelihood of injuries for players, even though having another playoff team is hypothetically fun and gives you another shot at the postseason.
Well, can we talk about safety real quick here? Because
yeah.
Let's think about this. Jake, you just pointed out this thing about the number two seeds on both sides now have to play on wild card weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Plus you add two number seven seeds. That's roughly 200 players. Right, four teams.
You'd have six wild card games.
Right, but that's roughly 200 players that are now playing an extra game.
Yeah.
With another, actually two extra games, with the 17th game and the extra wild card game.
Correct.
That's two more chances that 200 guys have to get hurt.
Yes.
Late in the year when they're probably already banged up.
But Tom, they get 48% of the revenue, Tom. They get 48% now, and that's going to lead to $5 billion. And this number that's been thrown around, I heard that last night, and I heard it today, and it made me really skeptical when I heard that number, because I'm going $5 billion. If they are getting $5 billion every year in increased revenue, or they're getting $5 billion per year, how are the players not signing up for that? Like, that is a significant amount that's going to drastically change the salary cap and benefits, but that's not the case. The guy, it was kind of confusing to see Richard Sherman – you know, kind of be against this mightily. And I was trying to figure out why, because this number kept being thrown around as if it is 48%, and that would be a $5 billion increase, $2.25 to $5 billion per year. Well, that's not the case. It is over the totality of the deal. So I reached out to...
Which is what, like 10 years?
Sherman, talked to him about it, and yeah, it's 10 years. So although that is a significant number as we all look at it and we're thinking, wow, $5 billion, but you add over 10 years, you add every single player that's going to play during that time, right? It's not as big of an increase in revenue as you would think.
How does that divide out?
It's not as high as you would think it would
be. To every single player that's going to play football in that amount of time?
Correct.
It's like a class action lawsuit, where you get a nickel
exactly.
by the time it's all done.
Exactly.
When Jake talked about the football game Madden thing, and it's like, wait a minute, what is this check, $200?
Right.
Yeah, I was pumped to get this NCAA check. I'm going to get paid, baby. I'm going to get a couple thousand.
You get it. I guess I'll get a Starbucks gift card.
Yeah, I got like $100 or something like that. It was the greatest disappointment. But it's the same thing for these players is, look, the owners are very smart in the presentation of how they're going about it and how they're feeding it to the media of what the benefit is going to be to the players. But, you know, reaching out to Sherm and having him explain it to me, I mean, it makes a ton of sense as to why this should never even be a discussion in terms of player safety, in terms of actual revenue that is going to be brought to the players. It's not worth the risk. It's not worth the risk of player safety that they already go through if the revenue is not going to be a dramatic increase every single year. It's just not, it's not at that level to be all gung-ho about it.
I know we're going to jump to our three questions, but I have to know. I feel like you are so fired up about this topic and excited about it, and I know you wrote about it for 710 Sports. Is it, what is it particularly about it that you think gets you most fired up? Is it the idea that the owners are making it kind of an unfair playing field for just more money, or is it the safety players might be sacrificing?
It's safety first. Two, I think, is the deception, which is, yeah, we're giving you guys more football. Ain't that great? When really it's for the, to line their pockets.
Yeah.
And I think three, just like I said, the dilution of the product. When we get to week 17, and you know, like the, that final week of the season, we're all looking, okay, tiebreaker scenarios, all that stuff. If they didn't add a game, but they added a playoff team, I might be, like, one or the other, I might be okay with.
So you're saying it's the idea of 17-game regular season plus almost half the league makes it to the playoffs.
Right. It's like, give me, if you have to do one or the other, pick one. But now you're taking away the drama, potentially, of week 17. Like, what do we really do? We're just adding more scenarios where teams could end up going through tiebreakers. I mean, I don't know. And again, rewarding 9-7 teams, 8-8 teams, 14 out of 32 teams. That's basically half the league. That's almost all of the quote-unquote good teams. The teams that aren't in the playoffs aren't deserving of it. I mean, it's like, it's too...
It's almost like you have to have a losing record to not make the playoffs.
Right. I mean, making the playoffs in and of itself is a huge honor. It's like when we talk about coaches who may or may not get fired, and we look at their records and we say, well, this guy's made the playoffs 5 years in a row. Well, that's going to mean less and less if we're letting 8-8 teams into the field.
Yeah.
You know?
I saw someone text in and say if it's about safety, they should remove two games. I just want to make it clear, and I know we're going to get into this, that there are opposing incentives from owners and players. So it's a give and take.
What do you,
you know what I mean? That the owner's primary concern isn't necessarily about safety unless that safety costs the league money and PR.
Right. I just want my league to stay what it is. I think 16 games is perfect. I think 12 playoff teams is perfect. It's worked wonderfully for the past
30 years.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they figured it out when they added that second wild card in 1990. 30 years, this just mucks it up.
It's a league that had the right amount of everything, right? They had the right amount of parity. As always, that it's as you said, it's cyclical. It can always change from, you know, 2 to 3 year cycles from teams getting better to worse. You have the cream of the crop making the playoffs, and you've got a really intriguing, dramatic regular season to playoffs. And now you're going to have almost half your league entering the playoffs. You now become kind of like the NBA.
You're taking too much drama away. This hour of Tom, Jake, and Stacey is brought to you by Car Toys. Let's get to three questions.
It's time for three questions.
Can't wait for it.
Every day at 12 after 12, Tom Wassel's burning questions for Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Enough with the we got to protect the kids nonsense.
How can the NFL Players Association finally gain more power? Is it possible?
It is possible, and this is one that actually drives Boy Howdy absolutely nuts.
I saw you tweeting about it, Howdy.
Is this concept of players, and I am right there with them, this concept of the players saying, we don't get enough, we don't get this, we don't get that, and they complain and they complain and they complain all about how unfair the CBA is, and yet they are not willing to do what it really is going to take for them to be able to gain that kind of power. And that is for them to actually have a legitimate strike.
Yeah.
For them to actually stand up and say, you know what? No, we're gonna fight back on this, and we're not gonna cave in at the last second like we always do. Because if you never actually hold true to the threat that you're gonna make, it's just like throwing a tantrum, right? And the parents, you know, are sitting there going, okay, eventually you're gonna cave in and we're gonna get over this, and it's gonna, you know, all one big deal that you're making right now, it's it's going to come to pass, right? And we're going to move on. And that's exactly what the NFLPA does every single time these scenarios come. They complain, but when it push comes to shove, they always cave in and they never actually get what they want.
And I do think, though, that the one thing that makes the NFL players uniquely, I guess, facing an uphill battle with that is that the careers can be so much shorter, and that unless you're a star player, you feel more disposable because there's already been so much give on the part of players that you have to see so much power back at a time. And yes, a lot of the best players on teams are also the representatives that are there. So like Dwayne Brown, who's one of the players, you know, a representative, Richard Sherman, who's a representative. These guys don't have to necessarily worry about that. They're among the best players on their teams. But if you're a guy that's like a, you know, backup linebacker or a special teamer, you're probably thinking, man, like, I am incredibly replaceable and this is my shot at this job. And I'm already worried about it without a holdout and without, you know, kind of protesting. And now I have to worry about being replaced because there's another batch of guys coming in that are going to want that job. And I just think it's hard to seize that power in this sport, especially.
It's a good point because you're absolutely right, Stacey. But really what it becomes of a league is if your star players, like your legit, you know, top tier of your roster say, you know what, I'm not going to play. And even though the league will try and continue on, you just have a glorified XFL is basically what you end up doing in terms of the quality of players. So even if those type of guys still wanted to go out and play and they have the right to do that, I mean, the fact that you're not having any of those star players and those star quarterbacks and all the things that attract you to the NFL aren't out there, that hurts the team. That hurts, you know, the ownership and all of that. So I still think that they need to at some point stand their ground.
Question two.
Number two.
If we're going to increase the number of games in the regular season schedule, should they add a second or maybe even a third bye week?
I would think so because so just for clarification's sake, the 17-game schedule wouldn't add a game onto it. It would subtract a preseason game, so you'd have 3 preseason games and 17 regular season games. So, yeah, I would think you'd want to add a bye week. So you'd, in practice, have like an 18-week season. Because if you have like a week 4 or a week 11 bye, you're playing a good portion of games on either side of that. And even one game, I know fans just hear one game and they're like, what's the big deal? That's a week of recovery for players. Or it's
2 weeks
that you
without
don't
playing.
Have.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I would hope that they would, but I don't know.
They should, absolutely. And for a lot of those players that are in that fourth preseason game, those star players, the starters, they're not playing. They're not playing in the fourth preseason game. So it's essentially, you know, you're taking that week of a quote-unquote bye, so to speak, away from the players and adding that regular season game. So you need to fit in a bye somewhere else if they're going to go through that longer, you know, more grueling season.
Should they at least do this after week 18? Should they at least give a bye to all the teams that have, not a bye, but a week in between, maybe a week off for all the teams that have to play on wildcard weekend?
That would be interesting.
Rather than going from the season straight into the playoffs, now that we've got all these
after
extra
the
teams on wildcard weekend, or does that take away
from... So then you'd have a 2-week bye week for the number one seed, though.
Yeah,
it's a good point. And that probably is something that they wouldn't end up
doing.
I don't think they would. It's a good thought, and it would be a nice way to go about it. But yeah, as Stacey pointed out, that would mean, you know, one team's taking 2 weeks off. And
well, can't they just make the number one seeds do push-ups while the other teams are playing or something?
There you go.
Next.
Number three.
All right, here's the harsh reality for whiners like me. At the end of the day, won't we all just get used to the new playoff format, whether we like it or not?
Yeah, I mean, people got used to it after the changes in 1990, which was, in retrospect, just adding one game. Or adding two teams to the playoff pool from 10 to 12, and now you're going, you know, adding a few more. But I do think there's a limit. I don't think people were embracing the MLB's proposal. when they proposed their postseason changes. That seemed incredibly unpopular. And I don't think this is nearly as unpopular as that because it feels like such a small change. But when you start pushing toward 50% of the team or 50% of the teams in the playoffs, I think people start feeling like it's just too much.
Yeah, this people are gonna get on board. Like, once this gets cleared, once this actually goes through, people are going to get on board and we're going to move on, and it's really going to be a non-issue, in my opinion, moving forward, just because of the fact that it is football. It's still king. Everybody is going to be excited. Most of the reactions I saw from fans, and even when, you know, the top of the show, I said, as a fan, as just a casual fan's perspective, I'm happy because I get to watch three games throughout the entirety of Saturday and Sunday on both days rather than just two. Like, I'm excited to watch that. But when you factor in everything else, that's where, you know, I have I am opposed to the whole thing. But just from a casual fan, you're telling me that I can watch three playoff games on that wild card weekend? I'm not going to be upset about that.
It doesn't seem like too much to you. I know it sounds great, the idea of it. But remember, it's 2 days, so it's Saturday and Sunday, six games. Like, by the time you get into Sunday, like that second game, aren't you going to be sick of it?
It's the playoffs, man.
I don't think
it's the playoffs,
but it's a bunch of teams that are mediocre.
Well, maybe they
not every
they
year
just needed
though.
That they just needed that run, like the Rams, right?
Yeah.
The Rams, they started getting better. At the end of the year, who knows what they do with one more game, one more opportunity in the playoffs. That's why those playoff games are pretty fun.
In the
NFL, I think there's a lot more parity normally see.
No, of course there are. I mean, there's a handful of teams that don't make the playoffs that are just as good as a handful of teams that are in the playoffs. I get that. But they didn't earn their way in with the allotted time that was given to them. Boom, it's over.
No, I agree. But I'm saying that at this point, once they technically have earned their way in, right, I'm not going to sit there and complain about this one team unless they're just absolutely horrendous and they're 7-9 or something like that. But if they're 9-7, you know, making it in, I'm not really going to complain too much.
Nor will I. Like, when it finally rolls around, look, the human brain has this, like, all things must pass mechanism in it where you can't continue to complain about the same thing for too long before your brain just sort of shuts it out. So what am I going to do? Like, complain about the new playoff format for the next decade or whatever? No, I'm just going to adjust to it like everybody else. Look, what?
I was going to say someone texted in something I hadn't thought about. I'll ask you during the break. We'll see.
Okay. Can we address it later?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Salk's in next. We'll get his opinion on this. 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Rost.
We bring Mike Salk in every single day, and there are certain topics that I know you're going to have like a scorching hot take on.
Like,
I don't
trouble in the Suez?
Trouble in the Suez. The Suez Canal. I don't think that today's topic, the 17-game schedule, the extra playoff teams, I don't think that this fires you up.
You're wrong.
I'm wrong?
I hate it. Oh. I hate this stuff.
Okay.
16 games, no more playoff teams. Stop changing everything. I'm getting old and I can't handle it anymore. Just stop changing everything. I don't want, and more than anything, you know what? I don't have any good reason for not liking 17 games. If you go to 17 games, I guess there's no real reason for me to complain other than that I truly believe one of the great things about football is that you don't get too much of a good thing. I think it's a major problem in America that once we like things, we keep getting more and more and more of it until we don't like it anymore and we ruin it. It's true of almost everything. It's true of sitcoms. If you go back through our lifetimes and all the great sitcoms, take Friends just as an example.
Be careful.
First few seasons of Friends are brilliant. Really, they're subtle. They're great. It's a really good quality sitcom. By the last year of Friends, Joey's like a drooling vegetable. He's so stupid that you don't understand how he could function in society. At the beginning, he's like the kind of dumb guy. But we just got more and more and more of that thing until eventually he can't function. And you're like, man, this guy's dumb to the point where it's not fun to watch anymore. It's true in social media. right? We start off with one thing, and then we get more and more and more of it until we've ruined it and made it awful. And one of the great things about football is that it's only 16 games. Each one matters a ton. It's why it's harder for me to get into the XFL. It's why it's harder for me to get into college football. I love the buildup to the one great event of the week, and that is one of 16 NFL football games for my team. That's why it's one of my favorite sports. Baseball, obviously, is very different. It's built to be a long-distance marathon. The other part of it is stop rewarding mediocrity. I love the NHL, but the NHL and the NBA both have this problem where, 16 of their 30 teams get into the playoffs. Okay, that's fine for them. I don't necessarily like it because I think it weakens their regular season, but fine, that's what they do. The NFL, one of the things that sets it and Major League Baseball apart is it's really hard to make the playoffs. Why do we need more than 12 of 36 teams to be in the playoffs? One-third is a good number. Nearly one-half is not. Stop adding mediocre teams to the playoffs and just make it hard to get there. It makes the end of the regular season great.
And I would agree with that. And
sorry, that was long.
No, it's great because I think for us, we feel all of those same sentiments. I want to get your take on this in terms of...
It feels like greed. It feels like it all just comes back to greed.
It's just greed.
It's 100%. It's not in our best interest. It's just greed.
It's just funny to hear, and I want to get your take on this, is this bone that the owners are throwing out there, that they are you know, selling to everybody, that the players, they're going to get, you know, 48%, 48.5%, and they're going to make $5 billion of more revenue and this and that. Does that to you, you know, scream that this is a overwhelmingly great deal to the players? Do you feel that way?
The players will roll over because that's what the NFL players do.
Right.
They roll over. I mean, that's what has Sherm talked yet, by the way?
Yeah, I actually.
What has Sherm said?
I talked to him.
Oh, he's talked to you.
Yeah,
oh.
I talked to him
privately.
Today.
Oh, hold
just
on.
Because
you're
it,
sitting
it's,
next to a
it's
celebrity.
Confusing. It's confusing
he
to
hasn't
sit
blocked
here.
You?
No, he has not.
All right, so what did he say to you?
So it's just confusing to me because we sit here and we're being told, okay, you're going to make $2 to $5 billion more for your revenue. It sounds great, but the reality is you know, as I was talking to Sherman, it's like, why are you so opposed to this? There's other players that are excited about it, and you are telling everybody on social media that this is completely wrong. Why are you so adamantly against this? And there were a couple different reasons, but really it comes down to the fact that they are selling that this is such a great thing, but that number that they're talking about is over the totality of the CBA, over those 10 years. You're not making it per year. And I think that that's what a lot of players are and fans are thinking is what's happening.
Yeah, you're that not, over 10 years you're going to get that extra money. But really it's just a half a percent.
Yes.
Yeah, I that's not a surprise. And I think Sherm's going to be, as much as he can drive me crazy when he's on like a team I'm rooting for, I think he's good at this stuff. I think he has a pretty clear grasp of what the owners are trying to sell and why a lot of it is malarkey. And I can't think of a group of people I would trust less than the 32 NFL owners when put together. I thought what they did the last lockout was shameful. If you go back and really remember the arguments in the last lockout, the NFL owners came to the players, not the other way around, and said, hey, we're not making enough money to support everything we're doing. We need a higher percentage of the cut. And the players said, okay, you might be right. Show us the numbers and we'll acquiesce. And the owner said,
yeah.
And they said, no. Look, we're willing to talk about this. We're willing to negotiate. Just show us the numbers. Prove to us that what you're saying is accurate. And we'll talk about it and find a way to make you whole. No. And so eventually the player said, okay, well then no also. Like, if you're not going to at least prove to me that what you're saying is true, or I'm not just going to take it on faith. And the owner said, fine, we'll lock you out. And that's how it went. I mean, that is the last NFL lockout explained in 30 seconds. Fast forward to today, why in the world would you believe anything that group of 32 says? I wouldn't.
Right.
Oh, we're going to give you $10 billion. We're going to give you $100 billion. Shut up. No, you're not. You're lying. You're going to give yourself more money. You are finding ways to make more and more and more money off this deal, and it's going to come at our backs. And by the way, the union doesn't get off unscathed either. Would it kill them to like try to protect the people at the bottom or to protect the game? They don't do either of those things. They protect the wealthiest group of players, and that's
100%.
They do that. You know, if they really wanted to protect the players at the bottom, they would say, they would demand in the CBA that rather than a 45, 46 game day roster, how many people on the game day roster?
46.
46. Why isn't it 53? Because they don't want to pay them, those people.
Right.
Right?
Yes.
Demand a 50. Demand everybody plays every week, or that there's an extra taxi squad so that more players get paid. Demand that the minimum for NFL players goes up, or have some level of concern over the game itself and say we want to practice more. We want the ability to work and get better at our craft so that they don't care about that. The union cares about the top. They care about the top 10% of players. That's it.
So how do you gain more power then? Because I don't know that everyone in the union feels
they should
that
hire
way.
Tony Clark in the baseball union.
Well, no, but I really do. I really do wonder, like, how do you go from having such a contrast in power between the owners and players to 10 years later, you're trying to get some of it back. But how do you do that? Honestly, there are good people in that union that are probably wondering that question.
It's a good question. And I think there's a couple of reasons why. One of the great things about football is something that the union shouldn't want, and that's non-guaranteed contracts. The baseball union is so powerful, and they worked out guaranteed contracts a long time ago, and it is one of the worst parts about the sport. Same with basketball. Those guaranteed contracts allow the players too much power in the management versus player daily struggle. Football doesn't have that. It makes it great for us, right? When a player gets bad, what do? You cut him. Well, not in basketball, not with Felix Hernandez. When Felix Hernandez gets bad, you get to watch him get fat over 3 years. Mm-hmm. But if he played football, you'd be like, all right, get out. You're cut. You got fat. See ya. You're not good anymore. Bye-bye. Go to the Braves. Go somewhere else. See you later. And we wouldn't have to watch terrible Felix for the last 3 years, or he would have actually been good because he would have been afraid of being cut.
But then how do you prevent being cut solely because you got an injury?
There are ways you can do that.
Well, I know, but you couldn't get fired for that.
There are ways you can do it. You can't. I think there are ways you could get around the injury issue and make it for performance. So I think just do it the way football does it. You get waived with a certain settlement and all that. So I think that's one reason that the players will never have, you know, quite the same amount of power. The other is there's 53 guys on every team, and even more once you start to add the practice squad and futures players, and a lot of them don't make that much money, and it's just harder to keep them together. So to try to get a union to stick together and go on strike and battle the owners all the way through it, I think there's just too many disparate points of view across the NFL. It's a much more diverse league than baseball is, or than basketball is. It's easy to keep a group of basketball players together. There's only 12 per team, and many of them have similar backgrounds. It's just not true in baseball.
Well, because meanwhile, you've got a practice squad guy who's like, this might be all the money I'm going to make for a while.
Yeah,
risking this. You're making $30 million as Jake raises his hand.
I'm like, you know, I mean, you got guys that are making tens of millions of dollars and you're sitting there and you're hoping that you're on the squad, hoping to make, you know, a couple thousand.
You're
on
that squad saying, how do I make friends with this quarterback so that he'll throw me some cash when he's done for his little quarterback school?
It's very different, very different.
Thanks, Mikey.
See you guys.
This hour of Tom, Drake, and Stacey brought to you by Car Toys. We've got one NFL legend giving a young player what I think is good advice, but it could be bad. We'll talk through it next. 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Rost.
You know, when I was at ESPN, when I was first there, I think Emmett Smith was working there as an analyst. And as good as a football player as he was, I never thought he was a particularly great analyst. But he is a legendary Cowboy, and so it's part of his job, his post-football job, you know, to show up at events and to talk to some of the younger players and maybe to give them advice here and there. I think he's giving Dak Prescott bad advice, but I understand where he's coming from. You want to take it from here, Staves?
Yeah, so actually, Kyle, we got this. Okay, here was Emmett Smith explaining why Dak Prescott should take less money.
Dak has to understand and maybe take another perspective. The perspective may not be all the money that you get. It may be how much of the money you're willing to leave on the table, because the Cowboys is a marketable organization.
And so you got all that extra money that's not
there. So if you are the face of the franchise, would it not, instead of taking 35, would you take 28?
Damn.
And leave some for Amari and pick up the other 35 through endorsements?
So Dak Prescott, obviously set to become a free agent. He's 26 years old. He has a chance to earn around 35 with Russell Wilson's latest contract being some kind of standard, soon-to-be contract for Patrick Mahomes. Obviously, he's going to have a hard time pushing for that exact salary, but he could earn upwards of $35 million per year, which will soon be kind of a going rate for quarterbacks. Now, this is Emmett telling him to take, well, what about $28 million? Why don't you take less for your team? And this, some people thought was rich coming from a guy that previously held out. But other people, and there are people in our own text line and comments that say that quarterbacks like Russell Wilson should take less money to make sure that their team is able to retain more talent. I'm of the belief that you get the money that you want with your contract, and to say that a player that can do something almost no one else can do doesn't deserve to get paid for that, well, that's the industry. It's a multi-billion-dollar business, and that's how much his talent's
worth. That's not what it sounds like Emmett Smith is saying.
Not necessarily, although I think that Emmett Smith, and obviously I'm biased here because he is a former player, a well-known player, and I think is coming from a good place, but it's a debate that rages on every time a quarterback is set to sign a new deal. Do you take less? Should you take less? And in this case, are there other ways that players can start to earn money?
Well, what he's saying here is that because you're a Cowboy and that's the most marketable team in the league, he's saying take less money, use the remaining money to pay Amari Cooper or whoever, and then go get that money that you're missing in endorsements. If Jerry Jones, if I'm Dak Prescott, and Jerry Jones walked up to me and he said, look, I want to win. We need to be able to pay you and Amari Cooper. I'm going to give you $28 million. We're going to save the rest for him. But I'm going to personally go out and get you X amount of endorsements that guarantee you that money that you wanted in your contract. I'd be like, all right, let's do it.
And if I know that's coming my way, fine.
Sure. And by the way, let's think about this for 1 second, and I'll let you talk, Jake. That $7 million that he's missing, if you're a quarterback, would you pay $7 million to essentially guarantee that you're not going to lose for the next 5 years?
But you aren't guaranteeing that.
You're not guaranteeing it, but come on, if you're paying your best wide receiver and some other players, you have a better chance to win. Rather than getting the $7 million and being miserable for the next 5 years because you couldn't pay anybody else.
Now, here's the thing. With that being said, I don't think that guarantee of winning doesn't make me want to give up $7 million. The guarantee of winning a Super Bowl would probably make me consider that.
There are no guarantees in life.
If you are Russell Wilson, you had a roster that was pretty below average, for the majority of the roster. And, you had good pieces around you on offense here and there, and you were able to get yourself in the position just because how good he was as the quarterback. But this is something where you throw out that theory, Tom, that would be great. And more players would probably do that if it's not against NFL rules.
Ah!
So that's the one problem that you're running
into, Tom.
Wait a minute. How is that against the rules?
It is against the rules. They cannot go out. The team cannot go out and basically be your agent and try and
That's why there's always controversy with Tom Brady.
You're going around the salary cap and saying, hey, we're not going to pay you here. That goes up against league rules, but we're going to find another way to pay you kind of behind the table. And yeah, like Stacey said, why has Tom Brady been able to take less for so many years? Because there's been some other things that have gone on that I think are less than above board when you really take a close eye at it.
And I should note, Jake isn't saying that's happening. It's a well-held kind of conspiracy theory people have that Tom Brady is like the model of taking less so your team can keep getting to the Super Bowl. First of all, has a wife that's worth $300 million. And secondly, has always had still one of the higher contracts in the league. Third, people say has gotten around that role. I'm not saying I believe that.
His businesses have been able to benefit, and there are other things that have gone on that he has been able to benefit from.
So but I'm saying
the
that
T-Wolves did this with Joe Smith and got caught. Like this has been right. done. It's more than just rumor.
Yes.
It has happened.
And I'm saying, why can't Dak Prescott in his first contract get as much as he's worth? That's how much a quarterback is worth. A franchise quarterback is worth that much today. If you're, it's not just a job everyone can do. Like, I'm not telling someone who's an astronaut to take less money or whatever. It's a job very few people can do, and that's how much it's worth in that industry. Sorry if you think that that's a lot of money and that he's being selfish, but that's how, why
no,
why should
I take
less?
I don't think you have to call him, I don't think we have to go so far as to call him selfish. I think he's earned that money.
Yeah.
But there are, but if you're going to take that money, or if you're going to go hard after that money, there are sacrifices that you make. One of which is that you're, owner is probably not going to be able to pay other quality players as much, and you may end up losing for the next couple of years because of it.
And that's fair, because there is yet to be a quarterback that makes like 15%+ of the salary cap and makes it to the Super Bowl. But I think as a kind of devil's advocate, you could say, well, it's really hard to make a Super Bowl. Like there are a lot of teams that don't make it regardless of the percentage of the cap their quarterback takes up, because it's just really, really hard to get there. So how do you know that that's what's keeping a team and not just injuries and not just all the other things that can happen over the course of a, you know, 16-game season?
I don't know that, and I've tried to prove that point before, but the fact remains that none of the highest-paid quarterbacks in the league have ever won a Super Bowl.
Right. So and it's true.
Well, that narrative would change very quickly if Matt Ryan doesn't give up the worst second half performance in a Super Bowl
that's
as an entire team.
That's his coordinator's fault.
Right. So that right there would have been a quarterback that would have gotten it done. But so, you know, that's the part I don't like hearing, that it can't be done. I think it can be done. It's just no one's done it up to this point.
I think you're right.
And it's just funny when we look at who is saying this, Emmitt Smith. It is funny to watch former players who are coming back and trying to give advice as they look back on their careers. And, man, I wish I could do this. And in the moment, as a player, you are trying to get as much as you possibly can and try and capitalize on your situation. I think there's nothing wrong with what Dak is doing. I think it's smart for him to do this. This is his one opportunity to really cash in and make sure he's getting taken care of. And I wouldn't feel sorry for Jerry Jones one iota.
Do you think Jerry Jones has ever done anything illegal in his life? Yes or no, real quick?
Yes, I probably.
Yeah, probably.
Okay. At what point will we be able to tell whether or not the Seahawks are going for it in 2020? We'll talk about that next. 710 ESPN Seattle.